life in the armed forces is full of adventure, life-changing experiences, specialized training, learning new skills, and making new friends. Whether you serve the country you love, support those who are serving, or are at home missing loved ones, it's a big community of regulars, reservists, veterans, military families and partners, and cadet adult forces volunteers, and its people are at the heart of it.
There's only a select few that can put their hand up and say, I'm a veteran, you know, and I'm proud to be one. And it's more than that as well. It's the opportunity that I can set an example to other service personnel. And I'm honoured to be part of that because it's almost like I'm giving something back.
Once you reach the end of your military career, there comes a time where you need to look at what comes next for you and maybe your family too. And that can be incredibly daunting. But there's no need to feel alone, because Aramark is on your side to help you on your journey. I'm Karen Bevan, and welcome to Side by Side, brought to you by Aramark. Aramark is a leading service and solutions provider within the Northern Europe region. They proudly support clients, partners, and customers in food, facilities management, property services, and retail solutions. In this episode, we're going to be exploring the inspiring stories of three Aramark UK employees who have made the huge transition from military life to a civilian career. We'll hear about what it means to be part of the armed forces community and the lessons they've learned along the way.
Sometimes obviously you looked at as a soldier's wife and your career is obviously doesn't start until their career finishes. There's so many different jobs available within Aramark. Don't think that just because you've got to move with your husband that your career doesn't matter.
And how they've been able to build on their military experiences and apply them to life in the civilian world.
You know, if you want it, you can take it pretty much. There's every opportunity for you to go all the way. I started as a head chef, now a mess manager. Literally anybody, you can make it all the way to the top as long as you want it.
First up, I'd like you to meet George. George is a veteran with an incredible career in the RAF behind him. But as you'll find out, his story didn't end when he left the military. George, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. It's lovely to have you here.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm glad to be here.
To kick off, I thought it would be nice to hear just a little bit more about your background. So if you could tell us about your time in the armed forces, that would be wonderful.
So I'll take you back some decades ago, back to the 80s. Where I joined the Royal Air Force, and I specialised in catering and primarily in chefing. So I spent maybe 14 years travelling the world, seen many places, visited a lot of continents, north and south of the world, so Arctic, Antarctic, Falklands. During that time, they gained promotion within my chosen specialist area, which, as I mentioned there, was chefing. And then we came into the 90s, and then it was just about then I realised I wanted to take a different direction. Probably like most people within the armed forces, unsure where that next step was going to be. So I did take some time out and thought to myself, maybe being my own boss, self-employment was for me. That didn't last long because I realised quite early on the reason why I joined the armed forces was I wanted to be a part of a team. And being in the company of others, and it's that camaraderie that we share, and it's in our DNA when you're in the forces. So I quickly then assessed my situation and realised that getting back into something similar, not necessarily in the armed forces, was for me. So I then reached out to catering organisations that were very similar to what I was doing in the Air Force, but from a civilian point of view.
You were still in the RAF at that point, were you, when you were reaching out to catering companies?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's all part of the resettlement program. In those days, I must admit, was probably lacking. So it's nowhere near as advanced as it is in these days. So it's progressed immensely in the last decade or so. But certainly in my time, you were to a certain degree on your own, and left to do a lot of the research on your own in terms of what you wanted to do. But perseverance and really sort of digging in and looking around and asking the right questions led me to defence services. So there was a synergy between what I did and still looking after defence or involved in defence business. So I continued doing chefing. I was then the executive chef.
That's a very fancy title indeed, isn't it?
I know. Look at me. I know, but it was great. And it probably resonates with a lot of those service personnel who are currently in terms of what that may mean to them in a rank structure. You know, executive chef, you know, is probably a high non-commissioned rank within the forces. So there is synergies between the two. If anybody is looking towards that and thinking, where do I fit in the civilian world? But when I was in that role, I then started learning more about contract management. And this really interested me because I wanted to know more and more. And so having a sort of inquisitive nature, that then really drove me to the next stage. So I then put a suit on, took my chef whites off, and then pursued a career in contract management. So really enjoyed that. And my initial steps into that management, it was a rapid learning curve. It really was understanding the background of how contracts are pulled together, tendered, bids are put on, the commercial aspects of that. So that was a great introduction to that. And then I really just continued on that vein.
Did that in itself, moving from the chef environment into that more administration, paperwork, contracts environment, that must have been a big change for you alone, to be honest?
Huge. Because for me, that was probably, looking back on it, probably the most daunting leap I've had in my career, because it really has grown from what you could call a craft-based career and then moving into that more structured, you know, managerial environment. And it was a steep learning curve. And I have to say, there's a lot of self-development involved in that, really catching up with possibly your colleagues. And so trying to understand what they already know. So there is that element of self-development. Reaching out is key to this. It really is. It's a huge point and finding out where your sort of support and mentoring elements exist within those businesses and really putting yourself in that environment. For me, that was the greatest move I made. You know, I really enjoyed my time while I was chef and that creative part. And you never lose that.
Did you find there's different skills that you then picked up on the way?
Oh, absolutely.
You developed on the ones you already had from when you were in the RAF.
Very much so. And for me, really, it's from an early stages of your career within the military, you're very much a bit of a sponge. You're taking a lot of command and direction from seniors, and you take that in, and it forms part of who you are, and it becomes a part of DNA. You become part of that family, that one unit, it moves together. And then that continues like that throughout your career. You soak that in subconsciously as well. So when it comes to actually going into an environment you're probably not used to, taking those elements and skills that you've learned into that new environment, you can't put a price on that really, because you then rely on those skills that you had in the Air Force. And they're all transferable pretty much without, I can't think of anything that's not transferable. And being a good communicator, leader, you know, where you've led a team, a small team, all those transpose across into this environment that we're now in.
I do think for some people it can be difficult to recognise those skills within themselves. Is that something you've had the confidence to recognise, or did you need a little encouragement?
You do really, really need to reach into yourself as well and understand sort of, you know, the character, what type of person you are, you know, people focused, or, you know, very such, you know, self-motivated, etc. And I think confidence is a great thing as well. Building that is a fantastic tool. The more you get exposed to that environment to build yourself in confidence, the greater it becomes as a tool or a weapon to, you know, to carry on and move and develop into the, you know, your chosen field and role. And it's something we're very keen on, and my current role is to mentor and etc. So these are all the areas that, looking back on it, that I'm glad I went through that aspect of military career, where it really was installed in us at an early stage. And it's just a case of just carrying on the same ethos, really, and that same culture into your chosen field. My opportunity with Aramark came along probably 2018. I did my homework. I researched Aramark, and all I got was positive feedback. So that convinced me. And I joined the Aramark team. And, you know, fortunate that there was opportunities within that time, and took advantage of that and applied for various roles and had a bit of a, two-step, you know, area operations director and now regional operations director. So again, geographically challenged, lots of logistical problems that give us, you know, on a daily basis, but love it. It's been a fantastic journey for me. So really, really enjoy the current role.
It sounds pretty inspirational to go from where you were when you first joined, how you progressed within the RAF itself, to then all these huge changes when she left. That's a lot for a person to go through and keep transitioning, because they weren't the same job each time either. You zigzagged your way up here, really, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's key. Don't be fearful of the unknown. For me, that's key, and really taking up and on every opportunity and just taking a little risk every now and again. You'd be amazed at what it means to you and your family, for that matter. It's taking a different path or route to happiness has got to be key. You've got to be content of what you do as well, you know, and be happy at what you do.
I think it takes some drive as well, though. You know, you have to want it yourself to get what you can back out of it.
Yep.
So you joined Aramark in 2018. Then you were promoted to an area operations role in 2019, and you're now regional ops director, up and up the ranks, just climbing your way up. When you look back, what skills from when you were in the Air Force have you brought into that role, if any?
For me, it's having leadership qualities, I guess, and empathy is another good one, integrity. Honesty. I mean, they may all sound a little bit cheesy and a little bit corporate spiel, but they're not. They are. We live by them, those core values, and it's something that's not dissimilar to what the armed forces got. They've got vision and values, and we adhere to them and believe in them. And the point you make about drive, that's key. Drive is everything to succeed in any business, anything you do, whether that's self-employed or working for a large organization, what I do. And so for me, that was something that was always installed into me in the armed forces as well, so that's drive.
It's interesting. We're talking about strengths here, and you know, all those qualities and transferable skills that come from the Air Force into your present day role. Did moving into a civilian job and your work with Aramark, were there any weaknesses that it flagged up that you had to work on?
Again, the normal skills that you would imagine that we all seem to be in possession of in civilian street is having the exposure to interviews and the techniques involved, and the thought of actually going in front of somebody, stranger for a better word, and to be interviewed by the individual was quite daunting. So for me, it was an early stage understanding that where were my weaknesses, almost doing a SWOT analysis on yourself, you know, what's your strengths, your weaknesses, what opportunities do you see and any threats to you, you know, so quite basic. But again, these are things that are second nature to those at service personnel. These are the things that are drummed in from early days. So it's really looking at that and then saying, where do I need to improve on? The commercial aspect of my current role was non-existent. That knowledge didn't exist. So really understanding where I need to progress and or understand so I can then take it forward.
And have you felt fully supported by Aramark in aspects such as that and just in the huge career progression that you've made since you joined?
Yeah, absolutely. I have to say, working for Aramark has probably been the best organization to work with. So I'm quite fortunate there, and working with a fantastic team. Those around me who work for me directly, my team, you know, that we have built over the last few years, and being part of the senior team in the sector, again, surrounded by fantastic, enthused, engaged, driven people, that really does help you then deliver your objectives as well, and really spurs you on, I guess. You really do get enthused by others as well. And I mentioned it earlier as well, Karen, about the empathy piece. I think that's key to what we do, and understanding other people as well, and having that empathy towards others and understanding that. Sky's the limit, I think, really getting that balance together.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was going to ask you about it. I think empathy is such an overlooked skill in any role. Whether you're a manager or below, you need to have empathy for your teammate.
Really, empathy is core to any organization, or indeed in your private life as well. It's understanding people, and people are core to our organization. And our biggest asset is our people. It's amazing how much that means to individuals that you listen. Listening is absolutely key as part of that other bigger piece in communication. So for me, being able to listen and support people, we all come together to work alongside each other and have a successful career, hopefully, and go home at night safely. So, yeah, absolutely.
Something I've learned from speaking to people in the armed forces is that there's a real strong sense of community when you're in that environment. What's the community and culture like at Aramark?
We're very close to our client and customer. And so for me, it's second nature. And I know those who probably may not had a defence background and who are working within this organisation, that in itself is quite challenging. So where those two worlds meet, it's that education piece as well and understanding each other's needs. And it's really just sitting down and speaking to people. So for me, communication is key in this. Aramark's got that spot on because we've got a good balance. We understand the client and customer. And they understand us because we stick by the integrity piece and the open and honest approach that we do. When we get it wrong, we own up. It's as simple as that.
I get the impression, George, I'm going to pay you a compliment here. By the way, brace yourself.
Uh-oh.
No, it's a good one. That you're a very ambitious man. Obviously, the career progression we've talked about, who knows where you'll go next. But did you feel encouraged by the people at Aramark and those around you to keep exploring what you could do in your strengths and how you could progress within your role and the company itself?
Oh, absolutely. If it wasn't for others, I wouldn't be sitting here probably talking to you, Karen, to be honest. Because I've been fortunate to know, you know, and still, you know, count amongst some colleagues as friends as well. And one thing you probably doesn't come across, but self-belief is not something that comes naturally to me. You know, there's a confidence thing in there. You know, you we're all different with it and how we deal with that confidence. But the encouragement came from others in some regards. You know, they believed in me. So when opportunities came up and they arose, they said, you should do that. You should go for that. You'd be good at that. And it's great to hear that, but, you know, and it's encouraging, but only you can do something about it. You need to put yourself out there and put yourself in that position where you say, I'm interested. I'm good for this organization. Believe in me and I will deliver.
And you're absolutely right. It's got to come from within ultimately. But the impression I'm getting from what you've explained is Aramark are there opening the doors for you. You know, they're going, this is here through this door. Do you want to come and explore it? And it's up to you. Take that opportunity, but they've got them there for the taking.
Absolutely, absolutely. And there's a lot of, you know, and I kept coming to the point about self-development, and you've got to invest in yourself and do the homework, look out. Things won't come knocking on the door and say, here I am. You know, you really need to put yourself out there. And networking is key as well, making people know who you are, what you're about, and what you stand for. And it doesn't take a lot to do that. Just reaching out, you know, sending somebody an email or a little Teams chat. It's amazing the response you get. And I've been overwhelmed by that, just the friendliness within the organization, just to go, hi, oh, congratulations on your new role. Great, we can meet up soon. And so it's been fantastic, you know. And so for anybody who's thinking along that lines, it's really, yeah, but self-belief, do your homework, you know, and networking is a great tool as well to help you.
So obviously being in the RAF, I think you said it was for 14 years. That's a huge part of your life. To leave that behind must have been quite a momentous thing for you. What does it mean to you to be a veteran?
There's only a select few that can put their hand up and say, I'm a veteran, you know, and I'm proud to be one. And I've got many associates and colleagues who are ex-service personnel. And we walk around, you know, in any sort of remembrance times with our veterans, proudly displaying our veterans badge. But for me, it's more than that as well. It's the opportunity that I can set an example to other service personnel that who are thinking of coming in and being that, I guess, and to some regard, a point of contact. And I can tell them about my time in the services and what it means to me being a veteran in a large organization like Aramark. So, you know, one of those areas that's helped me there is early on in my career with Aramark. It was identified that I was a veteran and I was invited along with other colleagues to form part of the Armed Forces Covenant Steering Group Committee. My part in that is probably the best part from that I like to say is really being a point of contact and really looking at for the issues and any support that we as an organization can provide our veterans reservists. I'm honored to be part of that because it's almost like I'm giving something back as well. For those who are, you know, leaving, because it is quite overwhelming for some, it's quite daunting for some, particularly, you know, that in whatever they've served abroad and, you know, in some, you know, hot spots within the world. And you know, so there's a lot of background to that I would like to think that we could help in some capacity. So giving them that understanding and you know, that we as an organization, it's firmly in our culture that we look after veterans, reservists, and families as well, for that matter. You know, so we've got a lot of support out there, not only within the steering group, but elsewhere in our organization, where they're not necessarily in defense, but there are other parts, commercial or business and industry, where we've got veterans and indeed reservists, you know, and the more of those, the better, as far as I'm concerned. Armap, you know, we look after our people. And I think having reservists in amongst us and veterans enriches us as an organization and can only do us good going forward.
Well, that sounds really interesting. Hugely positive thing for the company to have, I'm sure. Is your role essentially within the steering group to be a figurehead? As a veteran yourself, you're there to put forward and highlight things that veterans might need or how they could be supported.
So, yeah, I guess I suppose my part on the committee is to represent the veterans and reservists, but not only myself. We've got, you know, other colleagues involved in that steering group. You know, our senior sponsor is Emma Robson, who's our HR director for RMAP. So it just gives you an indication how important this group and steering committee is to us as an organization and the investment we put into it. So we're representatives of all areas of our organization, be it marketing. And there's many other elements that probably don't get mentioned either, but support us in many other ways. So some of the areas that we, not only veterans and reservists, but spouses and families, it's the whole armed forces community. And that goes further down to cadets, et cetera, that we look to support as well. So it really is in all elements to the armed forces that we have got an invested interest in to deliver and help and support those individuals or organisations for that matter.
What would your advice be to anyone that was looking to leave the armed forces for an exciting new opportunity or that were in a similar position as you were all those years ago?
If it's something you're interested, you know, find out where your nearest organisation is, you know, and if it's Aramark, then just speak, you know, get in touch with the general manager is the first step, who could then guide you and point you in the right direction. But just more importantly, make yourself known to that person, what you're about, what sort of skills you come, what's your background, your current, and where you would like to go. And if they can't help you, they'll certainly point you in the right direction in terms of where we can provide support. Because as much as RMAP's an organization that primarily, you know, looks after and provides services for catering and cleaning, it's a vast world within that. There's procurement, there's supply chain, there's finance, there's human resources, commercial. It's huge. And all those elements, there's a transferable skill to them from a service leaver. And it's just for them to understand what else we do. And so doing a little bit of homework, reach out to your local manager, and then we can just give them an introduction, really, to our organization and just find out what we're all about, you know, and we're a good fit, then we'd sort of welcome you, with old man.
Get in touch. That's your call to get in touch.
Absolutely, get in touch.
I've got one last question for you, George. What's next for you? Another promotion?
Oh, I don't know.
Where are you going?
Who knows? I said to myself, I think when I was fortunate enough to get in this position, this is it for me. I'm quite content now. Content. I don't think I've ever been, because it's always the drive. So I'm sure there's a few doors there that I've yet for me to knock on, and who knows? But continuing in this role and developing my team is key for the next foreseeable future. That keeps me, you know, totally motivated. So who knows what's around the corner and what's down the road?
George's journey is a fantastic example of how it's possible to build on your skills and forge a new career outside the military. And as he mentioned, there are opportunities for all members of the armed forces community at Aramark. Not only do they support veterans, but also those serving, reservists, military families and partners and cadet forces adult volunteers. Which brings me to our next guest, Tracy. Tracy is a former Marine cadet instructor, now working as a retail services manager at Aramark, who has been part of military family life for years. Her husband is currently serving, and as you'll find out, Tracy has successfully achieved her own career ambitions while being a military dependent, providing huge support to her husband from behind the scenes. Tracy, thank you so much for joining us on the Side by Side podcast. What I'd really love to do is hear about your journey, your career progression. But to start, I'd like to go right back to the beginning. because I heard that you were a cadet when you were younger, and I wondered if you could tell us a little bit about that experience.
So I joined the cadet force at the age of 8 years old. My brother was already in the cadet force as a Marine, and I thought, well, if he can do it, I can do it. So I wasn't able to do the Marine cadet side of it because it didn't allow females. So I had to join what they classed as a sea cadet side.
And has that changed now? So girls can just move straight into the cadets. You don't sort of have to go through sea cadets first.
So just as I became an instructor at the age of 18, they finally allowed females into the Marine cadets. So then I became a Marine cadet instructor over a sea cadet instructor.
Oh, that's a huge achievement.
Yeah, it was scary. So it was because obviously I'd been cadet from the age of 8, obviously, but sea cadet side. Changing then to Marine cadet side was a different section altogether because obviously you had to do a lot more field craft and stuff. Whereas before I'd done a lot more boats and sailing and kayaking, it then changed to obviously more war craft, more weapons and stuff like that.
That's quite a leap.
Yeah, it was a big change. But because I'd followed my brother through it, I'd already knew a lot about it because it was what I wanted to do anyway.
Yeah, you've been siphoning information
and
advice from him. So tell us about the Sea Cadets. How did you find the experience? Had that been a dream?
It was more of a confidence builder than anything. I was the shy little girl in the class that didn't really talk to anybody. So for me to actually go cadets, it was finding my way as something I felt interested in because at school, I was dyslexic, so I found school extremely hard. So actually cadet side of it was more physical, more hands-on. So I enjoyed that a lot more and it built a confidence in me. So we'd go to competitions for dual competitions or we'd go to a canoeing competition or training course. And it was meeting different people all the time. I think that's why I enjoyed it more. As a cadet, once you get to the age of 18, you're no longer allowed to be classed as a cadet. So you have to make that decision to either leave or obviously go into the instructor side. To do the instructor side, you have to come away to do little courses. So you go away, you do a course, it transitions you into looking after young children, how to obviously make sure they're mentored correctly, make sure that you're not using language around them and you're actually then their mentor through what you've just been through. And because you've already learned it and you've gone through the ranks and the structure, you tend to give back, obviously, the way that you were taught, you give it back to the youngsters as they join. So I was an instructor from the age of 18 to 22. And that's obviously, I switched from a sea cadet instructor to the Marine cadet side of instructor. And it was brilliant because you'd help and mentor young children that then went away and actually joined the Marine cadet corps. Now I can look back and there's probably 7 or 8 kids that I taught that are now in the Marine cadet band, or they're actually a Marine cadet now and they're still serving soldiers. So you look back and you think, I inspired them to want to do that.
And are you still in touch with any of
them?
Yeah,
I still speak to a lot of them and they still like, God, oh, do you remember we were going away for this weekend? And do you remember you helped us through this? And if it hadn't been for you, I wouldn't have thought to go down the Marine cadet route and things like that. So it's really nice.
Yeah, that's really lovely to know that you've in any way touched that person's life and encouraged them.
Yeah, you've influenced somebody.
Well, of course. And maybe, I mean, you mentioned that you struggled a bit with confidence yourself. You might have given them the confidence to do things without even realising, just by being a support network for
them. Yeah, and the thing is, as soon as you walk through those doors and you're in that uniform, it almost instills a confidence in you anyway, because you get a uniform inspection, your uniform needed to be ironed correctly, your boots needed to be shined correctly, your beret needed to be worn in the right way, you needed to salute correctly. And you almost walked in and you were like an act. You were a character for that period you were there for.
Oh, interesting. How did you find that side of things, like the discipline? Was that something that was a shock, or were you like, no, I like this, I like the routine?
Yeah, no, I enjoy that. I think that's obviously in the end why I ended up working for military as well. It's that structure, the military precision in things and everything. It really does. It just keeps you on track and makes you more confident as well.
Let's talk about your time as a Marine cadet instructor then. That's a huge shift. I mean, the weapons, there'll be all sorts of different things that you haven't encountered maybe when you were a sea cadet. Just talk me through some of those experiences.
Yeah, so obviously the Marine cadet side of it was more field craft and obviously out getting dirty, camo cream on, obviously camouflage and everything, and more assault course side of things and stuff as well. So where we'd go out and do field craft, they'd always obviously do like weapons training and stuff as well. So we'd have to teach the cadets on how to actually use the L98 weapon, how to strip it down, how to keep it clean, how to maintain it, how to clear any blockages when firing, going to live firing ranges and all stuff like that as well. So it was a completely different side to it, but the instructors that were already in place helped me through that to obviously make sure that we all understood. And that way then we ended up with actual female cadets joining, which was great because they saw there was a female instructor. They also wanted to come and join.
Could you still strip a good if someone gave it you now? Are those skills still there? Or would you be like, get that thing away from
me? No, I could still do it. You don't forget it. It would take a little while. Obviously, it was only Pacific weapons that we were given. So it was a very old weapon. But yeah, if I had it, I could probably still do it.
Are there any characteristics that you'd say you still have now that you developed back then?
Just probably more the confidence side of things. It's just taught me to, obviously, whoever you meet, there's always a way that you can create a conversation or get to talk to somebody. There's always some common ground that you can find with somebody. It's never to just sit there back and not talk. You need to open a conversation. You can't just sit there and expect to be spoken to.
What I'd love to talk about now, Tracy, is just a little bit more about you, what you do. I know you're a military wife, but you've also got a career yourself.
Yeah, my husband was posted and I then ended up getting a job for the catering leads. I was front of house assistant and then moved on to the front of house supervisor because there was a role available. So I applied and was successful. And then obviously that was in the junior ranks department. So I was obviously front of house delivering obviously food to tables and stuff like that. Then I moved from that location to a different location on site where I was an assistant for, again, front of house and the cleaners. My boss then saw the potential in me and made me the retail manager for the site. The lady that was the retail manager left. I picked that role up and then have been running with that since. But my role now has progressed to retail services manager. So anything on site to do with retail now sits under my remit. So I look after what we class as junior ranks, a sergeant's mess location and the shop that's on site as well. So vast variety of things, yeah, obviously whilst working here.
I was going to say, you've got a finger in every pie. Yeah. Let's just rewind slightly. So when did you begin your journey with Aramark? How did you become aware of them?
So Aramark, we 2P'd over to Aramark from our old company 5 years ago. So I've worked for Aramark now for the last 5 years.
I know it's only part of your story, Tracy, but I don't think many people realise that Aramark also support military dependents, partners and spouses such as yourself that are married to someone in the armed forces. What is that lifestyle like for you?
I've been pretty lucky because my husband hasn't been posted in vast areas. I've been very lucky in the fact that we've always been around this location. Not knowing when he's going away or how long for can be quite difficult when you have two children as well. When we had our second child, he disappeared off to Cyprus for 8 months. So I literally had two children under the age of three on my own for 8 months. That was trying very hard. But now they're older and obviously he's more stable where he is. It's nice because he goes away occasionally, but we tend to know when and how that's going to happen and when. So we can get more structure now. Whereas before it was very difficult. It could be... there's a water shortage here, we've got to go, or with this happening, we need to move, or I'm leaving tonight because we've got to go on exercise. And it can be literally the drop of a hat. So that side of it can be quite difficult.
It's such a huge role for you to play as well. I mean, I know there's massive demands on your partner being in the armed forces, of course there is, but you're at home, as you say, with two children, there's a house to run, there's all those daily little things that come with having a family and just a life and a job and everything in general. That must be very difficult to be able to forge your own career and get a job when there is the potential that you could be moved within a moment's notice at any point.
So my first job, obviously, when I left school was as a mobile hairdresser. Moving around was pretty good because I could always have something to fall back onto. So I could always go back and do somebody's hair or do some hairdressing or do something else. It was only when the kids started getting older that I then started to look for more of a career progress. And that's obviously when I ended up here. So you've always got to have that backup plan. But it's handy having a company like Aramark now so that I could move somewhere, still have a profile with Aramark. If something was to come up, I could dip in and out and help out and support. So you literally just do casual hours. And then if anything was to come up, I would be easily much easier for the company to employ because I'm already on the system. So it would make the process possibly a lot quicker if we were to move anywhere.
That feels like that must be a huge security blanket in a sense for you guys to know Aramark would support you.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's just focus on your career development then. Your current role, Retail Services Manager. Talk me through those steps throughout your career. I know you've risen up the ranks really fast, but particularly with Aramark, I'd love to hear that story.
When Aramark took over, I was already the retail manager here. So all the previous jobs were obviously with the old company. When they 2P'd us over, we then had to learn obviously their processes and their procedures, which was great because then they put you on different courses and things like that. So they openly said, look, these courses are available to you. This will help you career and process, but obviously develop you even further. The retail side of that was already in place. So that was obviously all I used to look after them was just the shop. It was only later down the line, Aramark realised that actually if they put retail under one sort of banner, they could probably get more streamlined out of it. So that's where then I applied for the role to look after the junior ranks as well as the shop, which again was another, it does retail as well as core feeding, but it was a different element to learn because obviously the feeding side of things, you're structured and you're set on what you can and can't offer the client. Whereas the retail, it's just retail, you just sell and do what you need to. So that was another learning curve for me within the role. And then from there, it then extended to the sergeant's mess as well.
Can I just ask, was that purely your ambition? You're working in the retail and you thought, oh, there's an opportunity come up, I might give that a go. Or were you encouraged anyway by colleagues or your leadership at Aramark?
Yeah, no, my boss that I have now is really, obviously, he's always backed me 100% in everything. And he's always said that I've got that flair for retail. Because originally I wanted to go down the mess manager route. When I applied for the retail manager, it was only him then saying, look, we really need to look at you going down that route. It was only then that it sparked that actually, yeah, I am quite good at this. I'm going to stay this sort of lane. The support that I had from him was fantastic. Aramark have then supported him in the decisions he's made to promote me throughout.
Would you consider your boss a mentor or do you have a mentor figure at all in your career?
Yeah, no, my boss would definitely be my mentor. So I look to do my ILM level 4 business management course. And he is obviously my mentor for all of that as well. So you do online training and then you have a mentor that obviously takes you through bits and you have to do a business project and then you have to do presentations and stuff at the end of it. It's nice that most of the managers we've got here have all worked from the ground up. None of us have just come in as a manager. We've all done pot wash. We've all done front of house serving. We've all done cleaning, bed changing. So I think we've all got that structure and professionalism with each other, that whatever needs doing, we'll all just dip in and do it because we've been there and done that.
So they'll support you. If you started this course now, say you guys had to move, you'd just be able to pick that up elsewhere.
Yeah, because it's with Aramark, you probably can move it with you because it's with you as an employee and under your employee number.
We've mentioned confidence a couple of times. Would you have had the confidence to go for that course and to, you know, develop more learning, more skills, progress your career without the support of your boss, or is it something that you've just gradually built?
No, I wouldn't have done it without his support. Definitely not. So yeah, he's made a big impact in that.
What do you like most about working at Aramark?
Because we're very lucky, because obviously the location we work in, that makes working for Aramark even better. Although we're delivering Aramark's contract, Aramark and the military work very well together. That makes it more enjoyable.
Tracy, if you had to give one piece of advice to someone in a similar situation to yourself, what would that be?
That their career matters. Sometimes, obviously, you looked at as a soldier's wife and your career is obviously doesn't start until their career finishes because they've obviously finished by the time they're 40. They've almost got to switch out of that mindset and think that their career matters as well. And that there's companies out there like Aramark that will support that. And that there's so many different jobs available within Aramark and will throughout the whole country. So no matter where they're going to get moved to, they can take that job with them. So it's making people aware that they can do that and it's available to them. Don't think that just because you've got to move with your husband that your career doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think that's really important. You don't need to put your own ambitions on the back burner. You can support them at the same time as achieving your own dreams and goals.
Exactly. And there's always ways around working around the children and the job. We do community forums here. So normally I tend to attend them and then just say, look, come and work for Aramont. Obviously, you can do from anything from cleaning to bar to front of house steward. And a lot of people don't realise that that's the catering company on site. So at the community forums and things like that, yes, definitely put it out to them as much as we can. And to be fair, within the local community as well, because anybody can apply. But it is nice sometimes to have the wives because they understand the military side of it a bit better. There's opportunities, endless opportunities with the company. So no matter what sort of thing you'd want to do, it possibly could be under the Aramont banner. There's always a job out there for somebody.
I loved hearing Tracy talk about how her confidence has grown over the years as she's built her career with Aramark. Confidence can play a huge role when you're taking the steps towards a new career, but it can be difficult to build without the right support, as we'll hear in our next story. Meet Clive. Clive is a mess manager at Aramark. He's also a reservist, which means he works on a part-time basis in the army alongside his civilian job, which is a massive commitment. Clive's journey hasn't always been straightforward, but it's clear he's never been the type to give up easily. Clive, just so our listeners can get to know you a little better, it would be wonderful if you could take us back to the beginning and tell us about your time in the armed forces.
I joined the army as a RLC chef, so doing all the catering for the actual troops on the ground. In the 15 years that I did serve, I've travelled pretty much all of the world, Iraq twice, Afghanistan twice, Canada, Norway.
That sounds like it was probably quite an intense, high-pressure job.
It had its moments, yes. It's pretty much exactly the same as working in a big restaurant, sometimes on a grander scale. So like Afghanistan, Iraq, you was up to, 20,000 troops feeding, 3 meals a day.
You said you worked there for 15 years in total. You were a chef. The person you were going into that must have been very different from, let's say, the boy that went in to the man that came back out. How do you think this time shaped you?
Yeah, completely. It's, you know, I joined when I was, 18, 19. You weren't really too worried about anything in general, I suppose. Just, you know, where your next pound's coming for the pint and Saturday night. In the army, there's the actual responsibilities there without having the responsibilities, if that makes sense. You know, you are needed to supply that job line.
And did you find that you took to it as soon as you were there? You enjoyed the lifestyle, as you say, the camaraderie, and I guess the community?
Yes, it is just one big family. You're not just friends. It is literally family. You could be, you know, doing 20,000 meals with a person one day. The next day you're down the town, you're doing whatever else it is you're doing.
What sort of skills did you pick up along the way? I mean, there's things that pop to mind when I think about the role, but I'd love to hear from you. How you developed over your time there?
So once you join the army, you are an infantry first. You know, being a soldier is your primary role. Then, of course, you either go on to just concentrating on being a primary soldier or you pick a trade. So, of course, I chose chefing. To me, it would have carried on throughout my entire career. You know, people are always going to need feeding. That was the brainwave behind it. And yeah, Afghanistan, Iraq, we primarily went out as soldiers. They put up super kitchens and that because the soldiers did need feeding. But the majority of the time we were on the ground with I had friends that were doing mine clearance, all sorts.
Oh, wow. I imagine there were a lot of ups and downs over your time in a stressful job. You're traveling around the world, different departments. Have you got any high moments, real peaks in your career?
Norway, beautiful country. We went over there. We was doing the novice ski and survival course. So as a chef, you know, we was back out on the ground learning winter warfare. You get up into these mountains and, you know, it's just snow-capped peaks. We were sleeping in, they were called snow graves. So it was like times minus 45, I think. Yeah, you know, it's just absolutely beautiful. We come back off the mountains, you was drinking out the streams because it's just pure fresh water. You get to the bottom of this plateau and it's just a big black hole. And we're off swimming for 200 meters in the water. It was a good experience.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds pretty idyllic, if you ask me, to be quite honest.
Yes.
One thing I wanted to talk to you about is you've been serving for 15 years. You must have made some really close friends during that time. making the decision to leave that environment after 15 years must have been huge, especially leaving these people behind. How did you feel and how did you come to that decision?
So I was in Kenya at the time, and the email came out saying, you know, the army's after volunteers to put forward for redundancy. I put my paperwork in, you know, not thinking anything of it. The paperwork went through. Much to my dismay, my higher chain of command, they did everything in their power to try and get it retracted. But because it had my signature on it, it was pretty much a signed, sealed deal. Otherwise, I would have been sat here, now finished my 24 years, a possible a different person. But, you know, these things happen for a reason. You make the most of what does get dealt to you.
Yeah. I was going to say, as soon as you got the go-ahead, let's say, for it, you must have known how you truly felt about it. Like, was the regret there?
Yes, massively. The actual realization of what I'd actually done sunk in. I literally went on leave, I think, pretty much, you know, 6 months leave straight away to try and sort out the transition from military to civilian.
What was your biggest fear being on the outside of the armed forces?
Probably not being anybody, because, you know, you've done this long. Everybody knows everybody, you know, because you get into a battalion, everyone knows who you are. You've got your respect and everything else. Whereas civvy street's a complete different ball game. You know, I used to do agency work, and going into some of these pubs, restaurants, you're like, well, I'm just like a little fish in a great big pond here. And there was none of that, you know, because whatever unit you went to, you still had, you know, you had your rank, et cetera, et cetera. You were somebody.
Yeah. And to let go of that is massive.
Yes.
And you say your friends and all that comes with it. What I find really interesting about your story in particular, Clive, is you're a veteran, but you're also a reservist. Could you just explain a little bit about what that means?
Yes. So when I left the army, because I didn't actually want to leave the army, there was part of it missing. So I signed on with the reserves. So you're still doing the military stuff on a lowest scale. So you've still got, you know, you still put your green kit on, you still go on exercise, you still go away. So you've still got the camaraderie, but you still go home at the end of the night to spend time with your family. You, in theory, volunteer for, you know, going away.
I mean, because you said earlier, you filled out that paperwork. You didn't necessarily ever want to leave the armed forces.
No.
It was quite a shock when it hit you. Was this your way of almost keeping involved to an extent? Why did you feel that you needed that?
Because my time wasn't completed in the army. I still had more to give. And I thought this way is the best of both worlds, if that makes sense. You're still getting the camaraderie. You're getting to go away. You're still getting the civvy street as well then. It's up to you if you want to go away.
And how does that work? Explain a little bit about it. How could you potentially be called up for service?
For basics, you know, you do so many weekends per year. You do it like a Wednesday night or an evening a week. But then there's the bigger things, like when COVID kicked off, we were mobilized as a unit to support the NHS by delivering the COVID tests. So when all the COVID tests started taking place in car parks, in supermarkets, places like that, we were the ones that led with the instruction as such. We all went up to Grantham. We'd done the course to deploy, you know, the testing. So that was quite good. And then we, as reservists, we went around to different units, training the troops on the ground to go out and deploy the tests for COVID.
Oh, wow. And how long were you away doing that?
It was about 4 months complete. So like from the first day we got the mobilization call to the time we was back, you know, handing back in our kit and back in work.
How did you find the experience?
It was different seeing, because this was the first real thing I'd done with the reserves. You know, I've worked with reserves in the army myself, but as a regular soldier, we've had reservists coming into me. But seeing how the reserves work completely on their own, it's not far off from the actual real life military. It was an eye opener again, because you're learning something new.
So as soon as that call came up, you knew you wanted to go and help, and you felt confident that Aramark were beside you, supporting you in that.
Yes, completely. They couldn't have done enough. With the initial training like days and out that we needed. My boss, he just wanted like a text message. Just text me, you know, you're not coming in today because of this. And it was 100% behind all the way from the company.
That must have just made you feel so much better going into it and that your job wasn't at risk. Was that ever a concern or?
No, not at all. You know, the position was kept open. There wasn't even talk of, oh, you know, we might offer your job out. There was nothing like that. It was just 100%, yeah, you do what you need to do. Mine was so simple. The transition back into the military and then back from the military to back into my normal role, it was just so easy.
And what a difference does that make to you, knowing that you've got this job, you know, civilian job now, but you've still got those links to the armed forces?
Mentally, it's brilliant. Because like I say, the camaraderie, there's something about it that civvies don't quite get it. Then I come back into my normal role and it's pretty much exactly the same. Aramark as such, they don't really interfere with you. It's not like, we're Aramark, we're doing it this. As long as everything's running smoothly, you pretty much don't know you're working for our company. Considering the size of the company, there's no real, no, we're Aramark, you know, promote this all the time. There's nothing like that whatsoever.
What do you like the most about working at Aramark?
One of the biggest things for me is you're not micromanaged. It's a relaxed atmosphere to work in. You know, there will be some high profile jobs that won't be this case. But for me, you wake up in the morning, you think, oh man, I'm off to work again. There's none of that. It's, oh yeah, it's another day. Yeah, there is the stresses, but it's nothing that you couldn't cope with. You know, you can approach your line managers without, oh my God, I've got to go and see the boss. You know, what's going on there? You know, there's none of that. It's just relaxed. It's an easy company to work for as long as you're doing your job, which is what anyone asks for.
And so if you had a challenge or an issue, do you feel confident that there'd be someone there you could turn to?
Yes. I'm not tech savvy whatsoever. So they keep loading me onto these courses and I literally walk into my boss's office, pull up the chair and he's, right, what's going on now? It's one of those relationships, you know? It's not like boss and employee.
Is training a big part of your role there? Is there a lot on offer that you can do? And is the promotion available? Do you feel supported in that sense?
Yes, massively. Each week we have a number of criteria to meet. So, you know, we have to deliver the training weekly. So, you know, training's constantly. And it's like your MVQs. There is different sections of the company that will put you through your MVQs. You know, we do day releases, everything like that. So if you're not even qualified as a chef, the company will put you through the qualifications you need. Promotions as well internally is massive. I started as a head chef, now I'm a mess manager. The training you need for these parts, there is somebody there, you know, holding your hand pretty much. This is what you need to do. So it's quite like the army.
And it sounds like you've progressed quite rapidly.
Yes. It's the willingness. You know, if you want it, you can take it pretty much. There's every opportunity for you to go all the way. You know, the company won't stop you. Even if you're short staffed, the bosses do push. You know, if you can promote yourself, then happy days. They're all for that. And they're slotting wherever's missing as and when they need to. So literally anybody, you can make it all the way to the top as long as you want it.
One thing I did want to touch upon, Clive, is I don't think it matters whether you're a strong character or not. Transition and change is always difficult and it comes with a lot of challenges. Do you think you would have been able to achieve the growth and success in your civilian career that you have without the support of companies like Aramark?
No, I couldn't see myself working anywhere else apart from like establishments like this. So there is, for somebody leaving the army as a chef, if they still want to carry on catering, then this is like the next best thing. You get to work in the same sort of kitchens, the same environment, the same job almost. As long as you're focused on what you want to do and get out of it, then you should be fine.
If you had to give specific advice to someone who is maybe in your position or, you know, looking for that what next journey, what would your advice be?
To plan their resettlement properly. Take every single opportunity that is offered to them, even if you don't think it's going to be beneficial. It may well be down the line. Embrace it. If that's what decision you have made, then you need to own that, you know, and you're only going to get out what you put in.
So what's next for you, Clive? So there's training available. I mean, you're a reservist as well as your job that you do day to day. So I guess who knows, really? You could end up anywhere. But what are your goals and what are your plans for the future?
So I suppose it's like everyone else. The natural progression for me now, I think, would be like an assistant GM, moving into that sort of role, you know, the general manager in, moving out of the kitchens and actually overseeing the kitchens, if that makes sense. You know, somebody underneath me to look after what I am doing now. My boss is completely 100% behind everyone that does want to push himself. If you show that you want it, he will make it happen some way.
What a positive note to end this episode on. I feel truly inspired by all our guests today, and I hope you do too. Thank you once again to George, Tracy, and Clive for sharing their stories with us. If you're currently serving and leaving the armed forces soon and are interested in a role or civilian workplace attachment, don't be afraid to get in touch. You'll find the link for more information in the episode description. If you're a partner or family member, please take a look at all our available roles on our careers page web link. All our roles are also featured on the Forces, Families and CTP web pages. Many Forces-friendly employers have signed the Armed Forces Covenant, including Aramark UK. The Armed Forces Covenant is a promise by the nation, ensuring that those who serve or who have served in the armed forces and their families are treated fairly. Businesses, charitable and public sector organisations of all sizes can make their promises on how they will demonstrate their support. If you're interested in finding out more, we've included a link to the UK Government Armed Forces Covenant information pages in the episode description. Aramark UK have also achieved Defence Silver Employee Recognition status, and we'd also love to hear from any organisation that might be interested to learn more about how Aramark supports the armed forces community and the benefits this brings to their organisation. You'll find contact details in the description for that too. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you follow the show on your favourite podcast app to get notification of future episodes. Or why not share it with someone who you think would love it? All that's left to say is thanks for listening and see you next time on Side by Side. Until then, take care.